going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
I had a dream last night, or maybe it was a nightmare. That was the Steelers drafting Shedeur Sanders in the first round on Thursday night. It was clear, it was vivid, and that is what happened. And we will find out in a little bit over 48 hours if it becomes a reality. Donnie Chedrick with you on 93.7 The Fan until 8:40 tonight. Pirates baseball on the air later on. Buccos are in L.A. with first pitch against the Angels at 9:38. Don't ask me why they play at weird times in Anaheim. I'm not sure. 9:38 is an odd one. They play two games at 9:38, then they play a game at 9:29. All in this series. I don't know. Maybe they want to get it exact and not just give you like a 7:10 or 4:05. Maybe they don't want to do that. Dan Zangrilli will have the North Shore Tavern leadoff show later. We will get into the Pirates later as well. And if this could be a daunting stretch, both for the team, but also for Derek Shelton, because it is not looking like it will be a nice little vacation out in Los Angeles. We will also chat with Joe Smeltzer from Nittany Sports Now. Joe will have good insights on the two big-time Penn State prospects, two guys that I think should go in the top 10. One of them will go in the top 5 two nights from now, and some sleepers from the Nittany Lions going into NFL draft weekend. A read and react is ahead to what Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan said today in their pre-draft presser. And on that note, I want to start with the Steelers draft and back to this weird dream I had last night. Like I said, it was vivid. Sometimes dreams don't come across that way, but this was clear. I was watching draft coverage on Thursday night. After I'm done, by the way, right here on 93.7 The Fan, leading you up to the draft, of course. I'll have you until about 8:30 that night due to Pirates baseball. Another weird time. They play the Angels at 9:29 that night. And when the Steelers got on the clock at 21, they made their pick. And that selection was Shedeur Sanders. I say all that to say this. I said this could have also been a nightmare. And maybe for some Steeler fans, it would be viewed that way. Some would say it's an absolute pipe dream. I could have woken up in a cold sweat because I think this is a mistake waiting to happen. I do. And I'm not saying that this is the exact replica of Kenny Pickett all over again, because it's not, and he's not. I think that Sanders is the better player out of the two, but I think the similarities between these situations are present. Pickett was a one-year wonder at Pitt. He had that massive extra season. COVID benefited him. He had a historic run that put him on the Heisman stage by the end of it, and it got him drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers in the first round. When multiple QB needy teams decided they were good, hey, we'll just play with whoever we have. We don't want him that badly. We'll wait on next year because that's apparently a better crop. Now, that's still up for debate based on how Bryce Young and CJ Stroud have played. Now, Stroud, even in a down sophomore season, he looks like the real deal. And Bryce Young started to come around, I would say, in his second year. But that's what some teams did. Sanders did not have that same college career. His numbers every year, both at Jackson State and Colorado, are impressive. He put up good college numbers. The fact is, a lot of guys put up good college numbers. Case Keenum is one of the greatest college football quarterbacks of all time. And he's been mostly a career backup and journeyman. He had that kind of fluky, flash-in-the-pan 2017 season with the Minnesota Vikings, if you recall, that was highlighted by the Minneapolis Miracle. But look at his numbers. He was one of the most prolific college football quarterbacks to ever live. The Buffaloes also didn't win a ton of games the last 2 years. And I know that program has never really been, at least recently, viewed as a blue-chip program in college football, and he helped them get back to a bit of relevance. I think his dad and his teammate did a lot of the heavy lifting. Coach Prime always knows how to find the spotlight, and Travis Hunter was the best college football player last season. He was the Heisman Trophy winner, and he is a guy that can do great things on both sides of the football. He is maybe the best overall prospect in this draft, either he or Abdul Carter from Penn State. But his team wasn't setting sights on the college football playoff. They won 9 games last season. They got to the Alamo Bowl, and they got blown out. And Sanders did not play well. 208 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. He was sacked 4 times. That game was, I don't want to say a microcosm of his whole career, but he wasn't always great against the stiffest of competition. As the competition got more stiff to him in college, it usually didn't mean a big-time game was coming from Shedeur Sanders. Now, that wasn't an exact science, but he certainly had his games where he looked quite questionable. I think he can be a good quarterback in the correct system. I don't think he's the type of guy to break a system and become great regardless of landing spot. I just don't see anything super special about him. Maybe I'm missing something. That's always a possibility. But outside of his last name being what it is, I feel like I'm not really seeing anything special with how Shedeur Sanders plays quarterback. But I have seen the point made, and I tend to see the point. I won't say I necessarily agree with it 100%, but how much would we talk about him if his last name was Chedrick or Nelson or Smith? I do think it's a fair question. Because let's think about how the draft works. Quarterbacks usually get overdrafted. They are the one position, due to the weight that it carries, due to the importance that it has to team success, that is the one position that doesn't see a huge slide in the modern era of the draft. And by that, I mean sort of like the new, you know, the last CBA era, like the last 15 years or so, where rookie contracts aren't as onerous as they once were. Which would explain, if you're going to use a rebuttal and say, well, look at Aaron Rodgers, he slid. It wasn't the same back in 2005. It wasn't the same 20 years ago. Aaron Rodgers slid more so because at that time, the money that was likely going to a first-round rookie QB, you couldn't really manage to have that guy on your roster if you already had somebody on a fresh deal. Now, he ends up going to Green Bay where they have Brett Favre, but then again, Favre was hinting at retirement pretty much every year from 2004 on. But look at a lot of things going into that draft. There were teams that had recently drafted a quarterback. There were teams that had recently signed a quarterback, or there were teams that had quarterbacks signed to, at the time, big money. So that's a reason why, those are the reasons why Aaron Rodgers saw that slide to 24 all those years ago. That would never happen today. Never. If that was today, Rodgers would have likely been picked 2, 3, 4, or 5 after Alex Smith went at 1. Because the way it works now, it doesn't really restrict you from taking a quarterback if you already have one. Look at the bold move that the Falcons made last season, drafting Michael Penix about a month after giving Kirk Cousins a massive deal. And now they're trying to figure out what to do with Kirk Cousins. His name has been thrown around in Steelers circles. I haven't taken those comments too seriously because it seems like there are others that will be on the table. But I digress. QBs don't slide unless teams really don't see them as big-time prospects. In fact, they usually get selected around earlier than they should. You're going to see guys this weekend and think to yourself, oh, I didn't think that guy was going to go until the third round. But when there's not many early in the draft, like the first night, you will see that more in rounds 2, 3, and 4. Last year, you saw with a super loaded first round, 6 quarterbacks go in the first dozen picks. Then you saw that drop off all the way to round 5. You got Spencer Rattler. That was the biggest gap between quarterback picks, I'm pretty sure, in the history of the NFL draft. And on that note, if you ask most people who cover the draft, the pundits that pay attention to things every single day of every single season when looking at these college players, and I get it, they don't all bat 1,000, they would say that Cam Ward would be QB 6 or 7 last season, like right after Bo Nix, probably QB 7. And then after that, you'd get Shedeur Sanders as QB 8. and there's some gap there. And think back to what I said a minute ago about the 2022 draft. There were a number of QB needy teams. They all passed on Kenny Pickett. They passed on a lot of QBs because the idea was that that QB class was weak. And it has shown to be historically weak outside of the final guy selected, Brock Purdy, who probably isn't as good anywhere else the way he is in San Francisco under Kyle Shanahan. You put him with some boy genius offensive mind, there's a few of those around the league, then the guy is pretty good. But it doesn't look great when things aren't all perfect around him. But what are we hearing now about this draft? And what are we hearing about Shedeur Sanders? The Browns don't want him at number two. They will likely take his teammate, Travis Hunter. The Giants don't seem to want him at pick three. They will likely have Abdul Carter at their disposal. Maybe they could trade back with a team and then they could take Sanders. Or one of these teams could trade back into the first round and get Sanders. The Saints, they really aren't sure what the future is like for Derek Carr. It's not going to be long, if at all. They pick ninth. And it seems like they are set with going forward with Spencer Rattler and Jake Haener. Now, we could see one of those teams surprise us, absolutely. But behind Cam Ward going first, there seems to be a bit of a gap. And it almost feels like the gap between Sanders and someone like Jackson Dart is closer than the gap there is between Ward and Sanders. Like, Cam Ward is far and away the number one guy. Far and away. I think Mel Kiper's the only person that is suggesting that Sanders is close or better than Cam Ward. But yet again, here we are. A number of teams that need a quarterback are now expected to pass on Shedeur Sanders. Kind of like what happened in 2022. And the Steelers took the bait. And now it feels like they are waiting to take it again. But don't worry. Mike Tomlin will coach him up in that high-powered Steelers offense. The Steelers will surely get the best out of Shedeur Sanders. Yep. Okay. Now that part, not really a knock on the player. It's more the lack of faith I have in their offensive coaching and firepower. They are going to take a guy 21st overall that will see some of his lucky college throws turn into interceptions. And he will take sacks trying to make plays or holding onto the ball too long. Kind of like the guy they just had this season. I also, and this isn't a slight at his entire character, but we did see last year some headlines about him going after teammates, going after offensive linemen. Are we going to look forward to him doing that to the Steelers offensive line when he hasn't done a single thing in the league? I'm sure that there are people that are convinced that this will work and they'll just blame the offensive line for all of the troubles anyway. Not that they're blameless, but they are far from the problem or the biggest problem in this organization. And if you want to call in and tell me I'm dumb or I don't know ball or whatever we do in 2025 or I don't know how the draft works, be my guest. You know the number, 412-928-9370. I love going back and forth with people about the draft. I could always be wrong. I've been wrong 100 times. I'll be wrong 1,000 more times. I think that's kind of the beauty of the draft. the crapshoot that it is. I mean, I was a guy that was bought in on Kenny Pickett. I was in a bar cheering the night that he got picked. Maybe I was blinded by the fandom for the guy since he did a show on this station or by where he played college football. That's the business we work in. People don't get everything right. And if someone tells you they do, they're a liar. It's kind of like baseball. If a guy hits 300, he's doing a pretty good job. And notice I haven't even really brought up the involvement of Shadur's dad, of Deion Sanders, because I do think that point that gets made a lot is a tad overrated. Because Coach Prime, he's got enough of his own football to worry about, but I can see why people have those concerns. He's going to be buddy-buddy with Mike Tomlin, and it does make me wonder if Tomlin will let Deion get in his ear. And then we could be working toward a combustible element of Aaron Rodgers mixed with Shadur Sanders, if that all comes to pass. Because the Steelers still seem to be quite confident that Rodgers will end up here when it's all said and done, and that he won't choose retirement. It does make me wonder if any of that changes if they do draft Shadur Sanders. Not that I'm saying the organization or the team should bow down to Aaron Rodgers, although they're doing a pretty good job of that already. But if I'm Rodgers, if I'm putting myself in his shoes, and I see the Steelers draft a quarterback in the first round, maybe I'm questioning if it's worth me going to Pittsburgh. Because what if Rodgers doesn't want to just play one more season? Yeah, he may sign just a one-year deal, but maybe he wants to play for two or three more years. Maybe he wants to go the Brady route and play until he's 44 or 45. That would leave me wondering, well, if they just drafted this guy in the first round, they're kind of looking for a reason to pull the plug on this at any time. And they probably will. I don't know. That's usually the theme of the draft. I don't know as much as the next guy. And that guy doesn't know as much as the guy next to him. I'm just giving my opinion on all of this. But I don't think Shadur Sanders becomes a star in Pittsburgh. 412-928-9370. Do you want the Steelers to draft Shadur Sanders on Thursday night, 21st overall? 412-928-9370. Is it a mistake if they pass on him? 412-928-9370. Is it a mistake if they pick him? 412-928-9370. I want to hear from you coming up next. We are just over 2 days, two full days. We're about 47 and a half hours away. Or no, I did my math wrong there. We're a little bit over 48 hours. We're like 49 and a half hours away from the 2025 NFL draft. And by the end of that night, will Shadur Sanders be a Pittsburgh Steeler? 412-928-9370. You can also hit us up on our fan text line at that same number. That's brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Your calls up next right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Join Adam Crowley and True Fan Travel for a once-of-a-lifetime adventure to Ireland when the Black and Gold play across the pond this fall. 5 nights in Dublin. That includes tours of Guinness and Jameson, a pregame tailgate party, game tickets, and more. Hotel and air or land-only packages are available. For more information on how you can take over Ireland with Crowley, go to 937thefan.com. You can find that on our homepage. 412-928-9370. The draft is two nights away. I will be on the air that night from 6 until about 8:30, leading you up to the NFL draft mostly. We may get a pick or two in before I have to sign off. Yeah, we have Pirates baseball that night on the air, so it will not be a full night of draft coverage like it has been in years past. And the Steelers are linked to a quarterback, not any quarterback, the son of a pro football legend, Shedeur Sanders. Will they take him at 21st overall? Do you want them to take him? Is it a mistake if they pass on him? Or is it a mistake if they pick him? 412-928-9370. Al kicks us off. What's up, Al?
How are you?
Good. What do you got for me?
Totally against the quarterback in the first round. Need to build up the defense. And here's my question. What happens if Cam goes down and we're drafting a quarterback at number 21? We're hurting. We're dead. Let's build up the defense. Let's get another running back in here, and let Mason or icon Aaron Rodgers take us to victory. Now, let me give you another idea, if I might.
Okay.
Are you there?
Yep.
Okay. Right after Tomlin signed his 3-year contract, I cashed in my communion money. I had made a lot of great investments, and I bought the Steelers. Now, bear with me. I am now the owner of the Steelers 9 months ago, but I have to honor Tomlin's contract. Very first thing I do, I make a offer that Marcus Freeman can't refuse or turn down. I make him head coach in waiting. And the last year the Tomlin's contract is in effect, he sits with me up in my private box, and Marcus Freeman runs the team. And now I've got great succession planning. This kid is going to be the future, and he's going to be a hot item after next year. So, therefore, I hope I answered your question. I am not in favor of any quarterback, let alone Shedeur, in the first round.
Al, I appreciate the call. I would argue that Marcus Freeman is already one of the hot commodities around football. He just decided to stay with Notre Dame after a season in which his team was the national runner-up in college football, but I think he will continue to find himself around the head coaching circles in the NFL a lot more as the years go on. And to your point, I'm on your side in terms of what happens if Cam Hayward goes down there in trouble. And yeah, that's something that needs to be accounted for, and that's why I think there are three pretty notable defensive tackles that I think fall right into their range. They're not going to be able to get Mason Graham. That would take a fall from like the top five all the way down to 21. He has been mocked to Jacksonville mostly pretty much from the start of mock draft season. But you have Derek Harmon. You have Kenneth Grant. You have Walter Nolan. I think any of those three guys would be good picks. And any of those three guys, I would feel good about placing in that defensive line. You work with Cam Hayward, Keanu Benton, and it feels a lot better right away. I also think they should double up at defensive tackle, but maybe that's just me. It's a pretty deep class, that's for sure. The second annual Fan 5 Alarm Marathon, that's presented by Allegiant Community Federal Credit Union. That will take place on June 5 and 6. This year, the broadcast will take place at Upper St. Clair Volunteer Fire Department. We are currently looking for 25 fire departments that will benefit from this year's fundraising. Register your department now at 937thefan.com. Brought to you by Aircraft Management Group, Firehouse Subs, 1-800-BOARD-UP, G.S. Jones Restoration, National Fire Sprinkler Association, and Guardian Protection. 412-928-9370. Mike is in Arizona. Now he's on the Fan. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, Don. Big fan of the show. So I think I'm all in on drafting Shedeur or just a quarterback at 21 in general. Now, I won't be mad if they take a defensive tackle either because they do need one. But here's the thing. If you draft a quarterback and they are good, which he could be good at 21. I mean, Lamar was drafted at 32. Mahomes and Allen weren't the first quarterbacks taken in their draft class. He could be good. Then you finally have your young quarterback that you can build on, which we haven't had since Ben. If he sucks and it's a disaster like Pickett again, I think that's finally the thing that would push Tomlin out. That would be two first-round quarterbacks you miss on and can't develop, and two more years of eh. I think that would be the logical time for a new regime and a new coach, and I think that also would align with his contract being up. So that's my take. I think it could work out. We need a quarterback. We need a good young one. If it doesn't, it's a pretty good indication Tomlin can't develop an offense or a quarterback.
Yeah, I appreciate the call, Mike, and I don't have a lot of faith that he can develop a young quarterback and a modern-day offense. He doesn't have any evidence to prove that he can. He has as much evidence as I would if I said, you know what, I think I can turn this guy into a franchise quarterback.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey everyone, quick shout out to Whole Foods Market. You know I'm all about eating fresh and finding quality ingredients, and that's exactly what Whole Foods delivers. Whether you're grabbing organic produce, high quality meats, or just a quick healthy snack, they've got you covered. Plus, they're all about sustainability and supporting local farmers, which I love. Next time you're grocery shopping, check them out. You'll taste the difference. Spring is the perfect time to refresh your table, and Whole Foods Market has everything you need. Hosting brunch? Picture this. Flaky, buttery quiche, crispy bacon, fresh berries, and of course, cold-pressed orange juice to brighten up your morning. And if you're in the mood for something fizzy, check out their seasonal Italian sodas. Berry Blend and Orange Hibiscus are total must-tries. So whether you're planning a casual get-together or a full-on feast, Whole Foods Market has you covered. Make Whole Foods Market your destination for all spring gatherings.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
When he was here, he already had an established franchise quarterback. Now, maybe that guy's best years were under Mike Tomlin, but he also only spent a couple of years under Bill Cowher, in which he won 14 games as a rookie, and then he won a Super Bowl in his second year. We have not seen any of this work post-Ben Roethlisberger. The plan has been awful. So I get taking another bite at the apple, maybe. It also just concerns me when we see quarterbacks slide. Because I mentioned earlier, that's the one position you do not really see slide in the draft. They often get overdrafted. And people will tell you that middle round quarterbacks or maybe a guy in the second round, a team will trade up into the first and get him. Like, they normally get drafted a round early or a half round early. And they are watched under such a microscope compared to every other position that when most of the draft chatter out there is, yeah, this guy's more like a top 30 player, but he's not going to be a perennial all-pro or bring titles to the franchise. That does worry me. a little bit. 50-minute mark on the Fan. That's brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge on Route 19 in Peters Township. 412-928-9370. Rich is out there. What's up, Rich?
Hey, how you doing? Listen, let me first start by saying I'm not pretending to be Adam Schefter or Mel Kiper or any of these guys, but I was fortunate enough to coach a kid up here in Maryland that ended up being drafted 4 years ago by the Falcons and still on their roster. And through that process, I met several scouts and personnel people who would come to the school, ask about his background, and I became pretty good friends with one scout out of respect for him. Again, not pretending I'm some big insider. I won't mention the team or that he works for, but I've seen several times that Sanders have been mocked to this team, which they do draft after the Steelers. And I was speaking with him today, and he was laughing that I could put everything in my bank account that he's not even on their draft board. Okay, so that's what this organization, who's been very successful and has a Super Bowl win, think about Sanders. And I'm totally with you. At some point, what's the difference between 7-11 and 9-8 or whatever the math is? I'm a PE guy, so you got to excuse me if I'm not doing the math correctly. But you know, in speaking with him, he said it would be an absolute debacle and an awful, awful pick for the Steelers. And this is a well-respected organization that doesn't have Sanders on their draft board. So think of that. I mean, what I'm telling you, and I trust what the guy's telling me.
Yeah, Rich, I appreciate the call, and call back anytime, especially if you have some intel like that. I mean, that's an interesting nugget. That also takes me into the desire for me. I would love to be like a fly on the wall in a team's war room on draft night. Like, I would love to hear those conversations, would love to hear where they are on a player. I nerd out over it that I will go back and watch the old, like, I think they're called Caught in the Draft specials. Like, you could find some of them on YouTube. They usually air on NFL Network, like they're NFL produced, and it gives you like some of that insight and conversation that was had before a particular pick was made. Maybe a team passed on a future Hall of Famer, or maybe a team picked the right guy and the other guy ended up being a bust. I love conversations like that. I mean, I find the 1998 draft to be pretty interesting, because a lot of that, after the two quarterbacks went at the beginning, Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf, talk about two completely different careers, but they were picks 1 and 2. The whole conversation is about Randy Moss. How far will he slide? The off-the-field issues. Teams don't trust that he can stay out of trouble. He eventually gets taken by the Vikings, and the man has one of the greatest careers of any wide receiver in league history. 412-928-9370. Chuck is on the Parkway. What's going on, Chuck?
What's going on this evening? Hey, seems that your focus is on Shador Sanders. Any thought maybe that the Steelers go the Jackson Dart route when it comes to quarterbacks, more fitting to their style, maybe someone like Aaron Rodgers to mentor after the Steelers sign him a week from today? But it seems the focus is on Shador Sanders. I'm more of in the Jackson Dart camp.
Chuck, I appreciate the call. I think there's a small chance of that, because I'm never going to say zero unless it was a position or a player that made absolutely zero sense. I'm not going to say there's a 0% chance that happens. That would be, to me, that would have to be like a trade back scenario for them, because like we were saying, it is coming across that outside of Cam Ward, this is a pretty weak QB class. You have Ward, you have a pretty big gap. Then you have Sanders. Then you have Dart. And then you get into like Tyler Shuck and Jalen Milroe and Will Howard and McCord and Ewers. And I have said over the last couple of weeks, I would just wait until either that pick on late night two or maybe that first pick on day three and take a guy there. Now, I can't say for a fact who will be there, but I'd rather just take some sort of flyer on a player there, because the other difficult thing about this, they go from pick 21 to pick 83. They have a 62-pick gap. You have to hit on this first pick. This has to be a good player. A really good player, because you do not have that pick now in the second round. That's also why I am never against the idea of moving back and acquiring more picks. But it seems like next season, next draft, they will have all the picks in the world that they want. 412-928-9370. Melvin is up next. What's up, Melvin?
Yeah, I don't know. I would say I wouldn't be mad if they took a defensive tackle or a quarterback, but I don't understand how anybody would not want them to take a quarterback. As bad as we need a quarterback, that's the business that I feel like we need the most. Our defense was not that bad last year, you know? So I would rather take a defensive player in the second round than in the first round. If there's one of those quarterbacks available, I would take them. If it's a miss, and it's a miss, then we got to draft another one. I would draft a quarterback every year until we found a quarterback. That's how I feel right now.
Well, Melvin, I mean, I'm not like saying that that's a stupid strategy, but what makes that difficult, because there are plenty of people that agree with you and they would say, yeah, keep taking a shot, until one works. You mentioned there, yeah, I would draft a defensive player in the second round. A little bit of a problem, they don't have a second round pick. I would also feel a little bit better about this whole situation if they did. I wouldn't be so against it. I just have a hard time seeing Shedeur Sanders becoming a star in Pittsburgh because of what they have around him. And it is tough to do. It is tough to use a first round pick on that. At least to me it is, especially when you don't have a pick in the second round and you're going to wait until late night two before you make your next selection. Puts a lot of pressure on how good those picks need to be. 412-928-9370. Mr. Old School is with us. What's up, Old School?
My man, what's going on, Donnie? Hey, I would love to go. Here's my order. I would love to go defensive tackle, running back, and then take a flyer on a quarterback if one's there, and do the Tommy Maddox year with Mason and try to get one that we really, really want if the fourth rounder doesn't pan out. Now, I was listening to Maurice Jones-Drew today. Listen, Donnie, to his order of running backs. He got it listed as Gentry 1, Henderson 2, Scadaboo 3, Judkins 4, Giddens 5, Harvey 6, and Hampton 7. Now, you know the Steelers are in love with DJ Giddens. I would love to get DJ Giddens in the third. And, well, I heard Harmon got some medical problems. That came out today. But I would love to get Kenneth Grant and then Giddens in the third and then go for Shutt or one of the other guys, Milrow in the fourth.
Wait, Old School, I just want to make sure, too. I was listening to you list those running backs. Did you say he had Omarion Hampton at 7?
He has Omarion Hampton at 7. Here's what he said about him. He said Omarion Hampton, the problem with him is when he has to stop. He said if he gets a straight line running, he's a powerhouse. But if you watch him, and he showed the video, when he gets hit and has to stop and change direction, he has a hard time getting back up to speed. And that is not going to work for certain teams like the Steelers. He even mentioned them. He said, you know, he has a hard time cutting and then starting back up and getting back up to speed. So, yeah, he had him 7. He said he's going to get a lot of flack about it. He said, man, I've been playing running back for a long time, seeing running backs for a long time, and I'm telling you, this guy is not better than these guys.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mr. Old School, as always. Man, well, that's a little bit concerning because I've seen him connected to the Steelers in a few mocks. It is starting to become Shedeur Sanders as the most popular. Some still have a defensive tackle, but I've seen Omarion Hampton thrown around there. Now, I mean, seventh. Fan Hotline, that is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Donnie Chedrick with you until just after 8:30 tonight. We have Pirates baseball on the air, Buccos and Angels. A 9:38 first pitch out in Anaheim. Dan Zangrilli has the North Shore Tavern leadoff show at 8:40. On that fan hotline is our buddy Joe Smeltzer from Nittany Sports Now. He covers Penn State Athletics. A great guy to talk to as we approach the NFL draft just about 49 hours from right now. Thursday night at 8, the coverage begins. We will also have coverage on the fan leading up to the draft before Pirates baseball that night. But we go out to Joe right now. Joe is also a baseball aficionado for anybody out there. Joe, do you have any idea why the Angels play their games at these obscure times? Like, why is it 9:38 and 9:29, the games that they're playing?
I don't know. Thanks for having me on, as always, Donnie. But, yeah, I guess it's not too different from some of the Pirates' third times, right? Pirates begin at 6:40, which I guess would be that, which would be close to that time out west. But, yeah, that is pretty odd. It might just be an odd quirk, like, you know, the Pirates insist on having all their home openers start at 4:12 now because of 4:12.
Yeah.
There might be some, like, inside reason behind that, but, yeah, I'm not real sure.
Yeah, like 9:38, like, they can't just do 9:40, or, you know, 9:29, they can't just do 9:30. That's odd to me. Joe, some big-time Penn State prospects going into this draft, even more so than last season, because there is – real potential that they have the best overall player. We've had a lot of conversations about Abdul Carter. Do you still think he is the best prospect in the draft, even more so than Travis Hunter?
I do. For the simple reason that if Travis Hunter ends up playing predominantly one way or fully one way in the NFL, is he a generational talent? I'm not sure about that. If he's a full-time defensive back, is he a guy that could be a Deion Sanders-level player? If he's a full-time receiver, could he be a transformational receiver? I admire as much as anybody Travis Hunter's ability to play both ways. I think it's something that we might not see again for a long time, at least not at that level. But can he replicate that in the NFL? I don't know. And if he can't, will he be good enough at one specific position to be a generational talent? Abdul Carter, I think, is a generational edge rusher. I'm not saying he's going to be the next Lawrence Taylor or T.J. Watt or Myles Garrett, but I think he's a guy that's going to make an instant impact, and whoever drafts him is going to get a perennial all-pro. And then as far as the quarterbacks go, you know, I don't think there is a quarterback cut from that cloth in this draft. I think Cam Ward is the best one. That's why it seems like he's a lock to go number one. Jackson Dart and Shedeur Sanders each have potential, but nobody is thinking, you know, generational prospect when they're thinking of those guys. So I think Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter are the best two players in this draft. And because we all know how good Carter can be when playing one way, I would give him the edge over Travis Hunter.
Where do you think is like a best fit for him? Because it is starting to seem a little bit more clear that the Titans are going to take Cam Ward at number one. It's starting to seem like the Browns are going to go with Travis Hunter instead of Abdul Carter at number two. So do you think if he slots in there at three, the Giants edge rusher is one of the few things they do have going for them. So Carter could potentially fit right into that mold with them. Or do you think there is somewhere else that would be a more ideal fit in those early picks?
Yeah, I'm still I would still guess that the Giants are going to take Carter. Donnie, you know, the two names that we've brought up, you predicted that he's going to take, that they're going to take Shador Sanders in number three. I don't know if you still have that prediction, but I know as of a few weeks ago, that's where you were leaning. But if it's not a quarterback and it's not a guy that could well be the best overall player in the draft, who are they going to take at number three? Obviously, edge is a strength, but much like the reason I feel that the Browns should go with Abdul Carter, even though it doesn't look like they will, why not have two big-time talents on that one position? I don't think that's a bad thing. It's not like quarterback where you have one guy that's great and another guy sitting the bench. If you get two elite edge rushers, I don't know what the problem with that would be. I don't know why Cleveland would be afraid to pair up Carter with Myles Garrett. Because of the amount of times that Abdul Carter has met with the New York Giants, he even tweeted a picture without any caption of Lawrence Taylor a few weeks ago. That indicates that maybe that's where the Giants are going to go, and that would be my prediction. Of course, players tweet cryptic things all the time, and Abdul Carter is certainly no stranger to that with his Star Wars stuff that got a lot of traction late in Penn State season. But, yeah, I feel that Carter is going to go in the top four. He hasn't met with any team outside of the top four. And since it seems like the Titans and Browns have their minds made up, the only options there would be the Giants and Patriots. And I think the Giants are going to take him at number three.
Yeah, I have since moved off the thought of Sanders going number three because there does just seem to be way too much smoke to the slide that he's about to go on. I mean, we might be talking about Shador Sanders, Steelers quarterback, at some point here soon. Tyler Warren, the other big-time Penn Stater, right behind Abdul Carter. I think this dude is a top-10 talent. The mocks have him kind of between, I don't know, I would say pick like 7 or 8 and then like pick 15. It doesn't seem like he will really get past the Colts if he does get outside of the top 10. Where are you getting a gauge on his draft stock as we sit about 2 days out?
Yeah, I think the best case scenario, as you alluded to with number 7, Donnie, is that he's going to go to the Jets. I think that's possible, but this might be more gut instinct than anything else, but I really like the fit that he would be in with the Bears at number 10. You have a young quarterback, Caleb Williams, that they feel could be a superstar. You have a new head coach, Ben Johnson, that's very offensive-minded, and you saw what Sam Laporta's been able to do with the Lions and Ben Johnson's offense. You have to give the offensive coordinator some credit for that. And, you know, when you're a young QB, your best friend could be your tight end, and I feel that if Warren does fall to 10, which I think is a decent possibility, that would be a good option. Obviously, Cole Kmet isn't bad, but Warren's a guy that I don't know if he would make that Brock Bowers level impact where he's a first-team All-Pro as a rookie, but I don't think he'd be that far off. I think this guy is the absolute total package as a tight end with his pass-catching ability, with his blocking ability, which for some reason people are doubting, but you watch the tape, there's plenty of clips around of him just absolutely bullying dudes. And obviously, his versatility, too. He was a high school quarterback, which I'm sure everybody's heard at this point. Penn State used him as a running back. They split him out wide a lot. This guy could really do just about anything you'd ask of him, and I think the Jets would be pretty smart to take him at number 7, but my gut is that they're going to pass on him, and if they do, I really think Chicago makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, you see the clips all the time. You saw so many highlights from him last year sort of running the Wildcat for Penn State. Do you think he's gotten any indication that a team may do that with him wherever he ends up?
Yeah, he was actually asked a question like that at Pro Day, and Tyler Warren doesn't really say a whole lot of anything. And that's not a criticism. That's just, you know, some guys are soft-spoken, lead by example. Tyler Warren is that type of guy. It's not the best thing maybe for a sports writer, but from a human element, you can definitely understand it and definitely understand why James Franklin and most college coaches prefer their athletes to be that way. But, yeah, going back to your question, Donnie, he was asked, you know, at Pro Day if teams at the Combine talk to him about his ability to be versatile, running the Wildcat, do those things that helped him get such notoriety at Penn State. And he kind of brushed the question off. He said it wasn't something that was really brought up a ton. So based on that answer, that doesn't give us a whole lot. But, I mean, why wouldn't you do it, right, if you're a team that has Tyler Warren at your disposal? A guy that's going to be drafted in the later rounds, Kobe King, I remember him saying after a Penn State game that, you know, you can prepare for it all you want, but when there's a guy that's 6'6", 250 pounds, jumping over and going airborne, you know, basically good luck to whoever's trying to defend that. And whether that's the college level, pro level, I think if a team is in a goal line situation, they'd be foolish not to employ what became known as the Warren Cat at Penn State. They did not use that against Ohio State at the goal line, but that's been talked about a lot over the past several months. But yeah, as far as, you know, using Tyler Warren's as a Wildcat, I don't know if any team will be as extreme as Andy Kotelnicki was at Penn State and using him. Like, we're not gonna see Tyler Warren throw any passes. I certainly wouldn't expect us to see him snap the ball and then catch a touchdown on the same play. That's a once in a lifetime type of deal that I don't think is going to be attempted in the National Football League. But as far as there being like some elements of it, yeah, you know, you have. Gimmicks have been part of football for a long time. William Refrigerator Perry, a big example of that. You know, why not say you're at the 5-yard line, 3-yard line, have that guy go out at a Wildcat, try to go airborne, and, you know, good luck to whoever's trying to stop that.
Talking to Joe Smeltzer, he covers Penn State athletics for Nittany Sports Now. Joe, you mentioned Kobe King, the Penn State linebacker. He kind of falls in that next set of Penn Staters that could get their phones called this weekend. You got Kevin Winston, you have Jalen Reed, a couple of safeties, and then Kobe King. They're kind of in that next set of three. So tell me a little bit about the safeties, because that could be something that for the Steelers is a potential target for them in those middle rounds.
Yeah, KJ Winston's the guy that really had his junior season stolen from him against West Virginia. He played a great game, was the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week, earned some national accolades from the Maxwell Club. And then we know now during practice between West Virginia and Bowling Green, he suffered what was a partially torn ACL. And the combination of obviously the physical limitations as well as not wanting to risk a fully torn ACL, which would not have been good for KJ Winston, Penn State, or anybody. He ended up not playing another down the rest of the year, not playing another down at Penn State. But this is a guy that just has a lot of attributes of a first-round pick, and I think had he played his full junior season, he would have been a first-round pick. He's got good height, good size. He can defend the run. He's very good against the pass, very instinctive football player, and we saw at Pro Day he was able to run his 40, and he did a pretty good job there. So I don't know if he's at full health yet, but he's definitely getting there. And I feel that the health should not be too big of a concern. But at the same time, I don't think he's got – I think the very best-case scenario is him going in the second round, and that's because simply he didn't have those extra 14, 15 games of tape that he would have had had he been able to play his full junior season. As far as Jalen Reed goes, he's a guy that I think could go maybe in the third round, might end up falling late in the draft. I feel like he's the guy that has kind of the widest range of possibilities. He doesn't necessarily have that wow factor. I don't think that KJ Winston does, but he's played a lot of football. He ended up playing the most snaps on Penn State's team. He burned his red shirt as a freshman, played a lot under Manny Diaz's defense in 2022 and 23. And then under Tom Allen, he really wasn't able to fulfill the role that Penn State expected of him because of KJ Winston's injury. Ideally, you know, Penn State runs a 4-2-5. They'll still run a 4-2-5 under Jim Knowles. But in Tom Allen's defense, the safeties played a big part, and ideally they would have been able to play Jalen Reed, Zaki Wheatley, and KJ Winston at the same time. That didn't come into fruition. So had Winston been healthy, Reed would have played a lot of that hybrid role between safety linebacker. They called it the lion position at Penn State. But because Winston was out, Reed wasn't able to do that as much and had to play back in that free safety type of role a little more often than maybe would have been ideal. But this is a guy that's versatile. He can make big plays. He had a huge pick six against Wisconsin that was really one of the bigger plays of Penn State's season, turned the whole tide of that game. And if Penn State doesn't win that game, they don't go to the college football playoff. And playing at the second level, he can do that too. So he has versatility, and he had good showing at the combine, ran, I think it was a 4.59. And he's just a guy that is a very smart football player. Kind of reminds me of Jair Brown in that he's always in the right place at the right time. And then as far as Kobe King goes, he's going to go probably later, I would say, a 6th, 7th round. And that's because, you know, in a certain time period, Donnie, run-stopping Mike linebacker at Penn State would have been a pretty hot draft commodity. Mm-hmm. But now you kind of have to defend the pass in the NFL, and that's something that Kobe King has admitted isn't his strong suit. So because of his weaknesses against the pass, he's going to be a guy that I think falls down a little further. But I still would expect Kobe King to have his name called at some point this weekend.
Joe Smeltzer, check out his stuff. He covers Penn State for Nittany Sports Now. Joe, thanks for taking the time, buddy.
Absolutely. Thank you, Donnie.
There we go. Joe Smeltzer, one of the young, bright Penn State reporters out there. Always some pretty good insight on the Penn State prospects. And it's only fitting because they do truly have two of the top 5 to 10 players in this draft. I know that Tyler Warren will not go in the top 5. It seems like his sweet spot is 7 to 15, and that's kind of what Joe was saying there, Joel. But, man, I just feel like whoever gets him is going to be getting, like, the next great NFL tight end. I think that kid's a hell of a player.
I'm kind of thinking about it right now. Because the quarterback class is not that good, I wonder if, now, unless Jackson Dart, Shedeur Sanders, whoever puts together this insane rookie season, it seems like Cam Ward would be the only quarterback who's got, you know, a fairly decent chance of winning Rookie of the Year. We could be talking about Tyler Warren as Offensive Rookie of the Year, especially if he's playing for Ben Johnson. Think about that.
Yeah, that's not a bad bet there, Jolie.
You mentioned how he was able to get Sam Laporta to have a lot of success with the Detroit Lions. Think about all the different ways that Ben Johnson could use Tyler Warren in his system with Caleb Williams. Think about that.
I do think that's probably like the best spot there, because then he's not even required to be like the main target, because you have DJ Moore, you have Cole Kmet, who has started to come around for them. The Jets, if you pull up that depth chart, they literally just have a bunch of tight ends that nobody's ever heard of. And I also think that that is just a nice little safety blanket for a guy like Justin Fields to have kind of in his back pocket. But I like where your mind is at there, Jolie. We could be looking at, I mean, I feel like he'd be probably in the top 5 for that award. No, it'll be like Cam Ward, Ashton Jeanty, Tyler Warren,
Omarion Hampton.
Yeah. And then maybe one of those receivers you want to throw in there. Like where your mind's at, Jolie. You can hit us up on the fan text line as well. That is brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Coming up, we'll get into a little Buccos. 6-game stretch here in L.A. Could it be a daunting one for Derek Shelton? We get into that coming up next. We have Joel's pick at the end of this hour. We will do a read and react to Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan's pre-draft press conference a little bit later, all before we hand it off to Dan Zangrilli at 8:40. So coming up, little Buccos on the mind here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Listen to the Pomp and Joe Show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at 12 noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. Donnie Chedrick with you on 93.7 The Fan for about another hour. Not a full 4.5-hour show tonight. Pirates baseball on the air this evening. 9:38, the first pitch between the Pirates and the Angels. Dan Zangrilli has the North Shore Tavern leadoff show at 8:30. 40. Six games in LA starting tonight. And I just mentioned the start time. Joel Nelson is with me behind the glass. The Pirates were swept this past weekend at home by the Cleveland Guardians. A team, and I feel like a broken record with this, a team they should try modeling their operation after in every single way, shape, or form. Yeah, that team spends more money, but it's the same market size. Cleveland and Pittsburgh are very, very similar. And the Guardians always find a way to be pretty good. And if they're not good, they're at least competitive. And they give their fans what they deserve. We don't really see that here. Bailey Falter gets the ball tonight, sporting an ERA around 5. But he is coming off 7 shutout innings against the Nationals last week. 7, 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 2 strikeouts. He did that all very concisely on just 83 pitches. He is somebody who will work usually pretty quickly. If he gets himself into trouble, then it's going to be a long day and it will not be all that long of an outing. But he has the ERA of 4.91, just 15 punchouts in 22 innings of work. He is 1-2 on the season with 7 walks. Jose Soriano gets the start for the Angels, the 26-year-old right-hander. 3.16 ERA, 20 strikeouts this season in 25 2/3. He has walked 10 on the year. His last outing, I don't know if I would say shaky. He gave up a lot of hits, but he was able to live dangerously. 5 2/3, 10 hits, 3 earned runs, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, all on 89 pitches. The outing before that, really good. He pitched into the 8th inning, 1 earned run, 4 strikeouts, 3 walks. His first start of the season against the White Sox, 7 shutout. Kind of like what Bailey Falter just did. 7 shutout innings for Soriano. 2 hits, no runs. 5 strikeouts and 2 walks. He did all that on 73 pitches. My man could have pitched a shutout if he wanted to on like 95 pitches. That's something you do not see very often. So that's just a little view of the pitching matchup for tonight. But as mentioned with Falter, the first couple of games not pretty, and the Pirates could use a replica of last week tonight. And seemingly every night, because they are hard-pressed to score runs. Joel, I was looking at this a little bit earlier. The Pirates in their last 10 games, you know how many times they were shut out?
I'm pretty sure 3 times.
3 times. Shut out 3 times in their last 10 games. You know how many times they scored 3 runs or fewer?
Probably, man, it's got to be at least half of those. I'll say 6.
6 times. You nailed them both, Jolie. Perfect on the night. 6 times in the last 10 games they've scored 3 runs or fewer. Now, they've won a game or two out of that. But, man, this offense just does so little to help out its pitching staff. I know it's the common sentiment this year, but the starting pitching I don't think is bad. I think the starting pitching is pretty good. They've had their rough outings, sure. The bullpen has botched a couple of games, but usually the pitching is not what the concern is. The pitching has to be really, really good or else the Pirates are going to lose the game. That's normally the run on them. You know, they lost the Friday game to the Guardians 10-7. You're not going to get many of those games because the Pirates don't score a bunch of runs. They're going to lose a lot of games and they'll lose a good bit of them while their pitching does not allow a whole lot from the opposition. I thought Dan Zangrilli, who will be on in less than an hour now, 59 minutes from this moment, he brought up a thought yesterday that we could see changes right around that 60-game mark. So if we hold it to that, the 60th game would be played on June 1st, a Sunday game in San Diego. And just by the way that the schedule looks, that does make sense to me. Because I am not sure, I am not confident whatsoever, I would not bet on it whatsoever, that this team ever reaches 500 again this season. Which shockingly is something that even in their bad years has not happened in almost two decades, where the team has not been better than 500 at some point in the season. The last time this team was 500, they were 1-1 on March 28th. They have not gotten back to that point or really all that close since. They got to 5-8, 4-7, if you want to count that. They're 8-15 right now. And I think there's a real chance that they come home at like 9-20 or 10-19 from this trip. Three games against the Angels, and then they go to the other part and they play the Dodgers. Now, of course, sometimes pro sports and baseball especially in the early going, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm saying all of this now and the Pirates will go like 5-1. And they will completely turn the season around, and they'll have everybody thinking with a like 13-16 record that they can claw right back into this thing, which if that would happen, they could. If they had like a 4-2 road trip here, they take 2 out of 3 against both teams, then yeah, we're having a different conversation as we transition into the month of May. But what if they're like 20-40 after 60 games? What would they have to be for Derek Shelton to feel safe? Because given what they have coming up, it just feels like it will be an uphill battle. 3 against the Angels, 3 against the Dodgers, all of these games on the road. Then they have the Cubs and the Padres. Then they go to St. Louis, then they're back home against the Braves, then they're at the Mets and the Phillies. Good luck in that 6-game stretch. Cincinnati and Milwaukee is a 7-game homestand. At Arizona and at San Diego to finish out May. Joel, it just does not feel like any of this is easy.
Because it really doesn't.
They're 8-15 right now, and it doesn't even feel like, hey, well, you know, Skeens is pitching or Mitch Keller is pitching. They'll figure it out, because they have already proven to us that if those guys aren't dominant, they're probably going to lose the game. If those guys look human, if Skeens gives up like 2 runs over 7, they're going to lose the game.
I know it's the game of baseball, but sometimes if the starter is having one of those brutal days, like Paul Skeens had against the Cardinals a couple starts ago, it feels like one of those NBA games where a team is leading 100-70 after 3 quarters. You know, like we're through the 6th or 7th inning, and you can already tell that the Pirates are going to have no chance of a comeback mounted in them.
Yeah, I mean, it might even be like before that point too, but it just really... it's hard to have any sort of confidence in them, because they can get a solid outing from somebody and it can go completely wasted. And we've already seen that happen a few times this year, and we are still within the first month of the season. And, you know, if it was me, I said a couple of weekends ago on Bucco Talk that, hey, if Derek Shelton can get an extension by starting 20-9, he should be able to lose his job by starting 9-20. I don't think that'll end up happening. I do think Dan is on to something when he says, yeah, they'll look at this after 60 games, about 2 months worth of baseball. And if they finish that series against San Diego on Sunday, June 1st, and they come back, they have a day off after that game in San Diego. They come back home after that. June 3rd, they start a series against the Astros. If this team is something hideous, like 18-42 or 20-40, I think the guy has to be on the chopping block. And I know that I think that he's not as bad at his job as Ben Cherington is at his, but it's just the way the sport goes that the manager is going to be the first guy to go. It's usually not the GM.
18-42. I think there's a chance it could end up being sooner than that, like somewhere in the point where they might act like they still have a bit of a...
You think if it like really bottoms out and they get to like, I don't know, like 10-26 or something?
Maybe a little bit after that, but to a point where they can act like there's still, you know, there's still such a long season ahead that we can get this thing turned around. I don't think you're going to get things turned around and become a playoff team if you're 18-42.
No, you'd pretty much be done.
Because let's say they strike lightning in a bottle if, let's say, it's Don Kelly or someone else. I think you need to make that move like soon enough where you think you still have that outside chance at a playoff spot. If you make a change at manager and think you can potentially strike lightning in a bottle with it.
Yeah, see, that's where I kind of come down on it too, but I don't know if they will go that route. Follow us on Twitter and hit us up there as well at 93.7 The Fan. That's brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Coming up, Joel's pick before we do a little read and react of Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan after the top of the hour. That's next on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Fan Hotline, that's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Donnie Chedrick with you for a little bit longer tonight. Joel Nelson with me behind the glass. The NFL draft, less than 48 hours now officially from right now. 2 days from right at this moment, the draft will be open. Maybe at that point, the Tennessee Titans will have selected Cam Ward by then, but we will see. I will be on air with you two nights from now until about the same time, until about 8:30 with Pirates Baseball on the air that night too. So what did Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan have to say going into draft weekend? A little bit of a read and react right now to the press conference from earlier today.
Guys, good to see everyone. Good? Yep. Perfect. Hey, I'll just touch base on a couple things before we take any questions. First, I know you guys are going to ask about the quarterback position, and I'll just tell you guys same thing. You know, we discussed in Palm Beach a couple weeks ago, you know, we go to camp with four quarterbacks. Right now we have two on the roster. And, you know, all options are on the table and how we acquire those last two. I assure you we'll have four when we get to La Trobe. Excited about this week. There's a lot of good players that can help us. You know, we have six picks. I don't know how realistic it is that we move up, but you never know. I think same put or moving back is probably a better, bigger option for us. But excited. There's good players that can help us. And really excited. A lot of work has gone into this, and I think we'd probably say we're probably like 95% of the way there. It's still going through scenarios, just like everyone at home is doing our mocks, trying to figure out what the other 20 teams ahead of us are trying to do. But feel good about it, and excited. Coach?
You know, for me, as we kind of bring our preparation to a close, I'm just really appreciative of the work that our scouting department, under the leadership of Omar and Andy Weidel, the work that they do over the course of a 12-month calendar. We as coaches kind of get on the moving train, if you will, and are highly involved in, you know, information gathering and talent evaluation through the winter and spring. But, man, we got a really good foundation in terms of our knowledge of this group. There's some challenges in today's information gathering, the number of transfers and so forth. Getting background information is a little bit more challenging in today's climate, and medical information as kids move around. And so I'd be remiss if I didn't acknowledge the quality work particularly the foundational work that our scouting department does over a 12-month calendar in teeing all of this up for us.
Does the Aaron Rodgers situation have any impact on your strategy or approach in the draft?
It does not.
So that was a quick answer there, that first one about Aaron Rodgers. But I said before, I don't think the Steelers should bow down to what they think Aaron Rodgers would make of their draft decision. But I do think, and maybe Aaron Rodgers, based on what he said last week to Pat McAfee, would disagree, but I just think it's human nature. If they pick somebody in the first round, he has to be second-guessing what his plans would be with the team.
Mike, you mentioned it's getting challenging. College football's changing. These guys are older. They're coming to you. Some of them are millionaires. How complex and challenging is it versus 10 years ago?
You know, I don't know that the variables that you mentioned are negative ones or ones that make it more challenging, to be quite honest with you. With age comes maturity, usually not only life maturity but football maturity. And you feel that from some of these COVID young people, their development of skill relative to their position and their floor, if you will, is at a pretty high level. And then the financial component, I just think that, and I've seen that over the course of the last several years, if nothing else, the young people come in more financially educated. Some of the lessons that we used to have to teach them in their rookie year, they've already learned, or some of the issues that come with money, the management of money, et cetera, they've been dealing with now for a number of years. And so I don't know that those particular variables that you mentioned make the process more challenging.
About guys that transfer, it seems like it's hard to find a guy in the class who's been with one school the whole time. How do you change the way you evaluate with so many guys having that background?
You know, thankfully, and that's what I mean when I was talking about, I'm really appreciative of our scouting department, man. We have regional scouts, man, that have long-standing relationships with universities, and we just got to turn the stones over. Oftentimes, we got to, you know, look, do research at multiple places on one individual. But that's not a challenge that's unique to us. I think that's a challenge that all of us globally face, and so from that standpoint, is fair.
Or do you think it's a good quarterback class, and do you think there's depth in that group?
I do. I think it's a good quarterback. I really do. Yep.
You said that Aaron Rodgers doesn't affect your draft strategy, but does the outcome of the draft and who you may acquire affect your pursuit of Aaron Rodgers or another outside quarterback?
I think what you do in the draft oftentimes affects maybe some you know, talent acquisition that happens after. We'll see how the acquisition goes this weekend.
Owners means. You called training camp a line of demarcation with Aaron Rodgers. Does that mean you're willing to let it play out until that point, possibly reaching training camp?
To be quite honest with you, I don't know that I meant that specifically for him or the circumstance. I'm just saying in general, you know, when you report to training camp, man, it's a line of demarcation for development of a group individually and collectively.
Decision continues, would you be comfortable with him missing OTAs and then coming to your team?
I hadn't pondered those things, to be quite honest with you.
I just don't buy it. I just really don't buy that part. I think it was two back-to-back questions from Mike DeFabo there, which are pretty, like, reasonable questions to be asking, and especially the follow-up. And Mike Tomlin is saying, yeah, I haven't really thought about that. Okay. Yeah, you haven't really thought about it. And then going back to the answer that Omar Khan had about the depth in this quarterback class, that was a pretty comical answer too. Oh, yeah, I think it's a good quarterback group, yeah. And that was it. Extremely short, funny answer. Unintentionally funny.
As it relates to what you might do at wide receiver and also any interest or quest you might have to try to get back into the second round. Does Georgia's contract situation play into either of those situations or scenarios for the club?
No. I mean, you know, we're glad we have George and DK here. I think they're going to be exciting for everyone to watch. Excited to have DK here, but no. If I am answering your question, but
Do you deem it to be an important thing for the club to get back in the second round, or at least acquire one more pick, perhaps, before the third day?
you know, we'll see how things shake out. I'll say this, you know, we gave up a second for DK, and I'm so excited that we did that. You know, it's having him here is great. And, you know, obviously when you get to the draft, you get excited about a lot of players, and you wish you had, wish I had 50 picks right now, you know, because there's a lot of good players out there, and, you know, we'll see how it shakes out.
Quite the interesting nugget today, by the way. The guys had Charles Robinson on, the Yahoo Sports NFL draft analyst, not to be confused with veteran WWE referee Charles Robinson. And he said he had been hearing, and Jerry Jones, he's often quite outspoken about what his plans are. He will put his cards right out there in the open, right out there on the table, that the Cowboys are trying to make a move. And if they cannot get a wide receiver at their pick, they may be a team that comes a-calling for George Pickens. And they do have a pick right in the upper part of that second round. Pick 44, that'd be a nice one to have. And I think it's a conversation that would be had if the call is made.
Lamar, do you have, I mean, if you don't get the quarterback on the first day, do you have a good idea of what might be available to you in the third round that you think you can get a decent player there?
I think we're going to get without going into specifics of the position, I think we're going to get a good player third round. And, you know, all the rounds, you know, we went through our scenarios this morning, Andy and I, and Dan Colbert and the group, and there's some really good players out there. And, you know, I don't think we're saying, hey, we're taking this position in this round and or that round, and we'll just let it come to us.
Do you ever look ahead to the 2026 class when you're thinking about positional value at a certain place to think there might be guys that next year when you're looking to fill a spot?
You know, we're primarily focused on this year, but obviously, you know, you're going to look into the future and see what's coming. And you know, you don't, not only in the draft, but really our roster and, you know, free agency and what the league's going to look like next year and the year after. So you always take that into account. But I think right now we're focused on this group.
Obviously, pre-draft visits aren't everything, but you guys did meet with 9 running backs and 8 defensive tackles. Can you kind of expand on what you learned about those positions and players you met with and throughout this entire process?
Yeah, I think that's a credit to how deep maybe those positions are. And for us, it's important, you know, get to know those guys as much as possible and really sort out, you know, how we would stack those guys and take those guys. But I think that's a reflection of how deep those positions are.
So I think it's pretty clear they are going to take a defensive tackle and a running back, at least one D lineman in this draft. I still think they should double up and take 2 because the class is loaded. There is a lot of talent throughout all 7 rounds of the draft. I think they should come away with 2 defensive linemen after this draft, but you can really start to craft out some of the positions that they will take this weekend.
The depth of those positions impact the urgency to try to get one of those positions earlier in the draft, would you say, versus other positions that aren't as deep?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd use the word urgency, but, you know, it's just, it gives you options, you know, knowing that there's good players, you know, at those positions. You know, there's options at different points in the draft where you can acquire those guys.
Frank, this one's for you. You picked up Kenneth Gainwell. You've got a really good running back class, it looks like, in the draft coming ahead here. What's your outlook on Jalen entering this season? He's a guy that's obviously, he's carried a lot for you here. Is he an RB1 type? Can he handle the load?
I certainly feel comfortable with his ability to do so. He got hampered by injury some in 2024. He appears to be ready to answer that. I know he's really excited about his opportunity. I don't think myself or anyone within the organization question his talents in regards to managing the ability to manage potentially that role.
So we will stop it there just due to time. We don't have enough time to play the entire thing, but we got about halfway through the chat with Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan today. There was Mike talking about the running back room. I did find this tweet interesting from Jerry Dulac about a half hour ago. In 18 previous years, I don't think I ever heard Mike Tomlin talk about any draft prospect, much less the detailed evaluation he offered today of Shedeur Sanders. Tomlin, though, freely admits that he likes to create smoke screens and throw the draft experts off their scent. Jerry has been somebody that's gone on record to say that there is a 0% chance that they draft Shedeur Sanders. Meanwhile, it is starting to become the highly popular move to have Shedeur Sanders mocked to the Steelers at 21 overall. But I do think that there is the possibility there that a smokescreen is being worked into play because, I mean, we saw it with Malik Willis a few years ago before they drafted Kenny Pickett. The thought was that Willis would be their guy. They had generational Graham Barton last year. They passed on him to draft Troy Faltanu. So it's not set in stone just because a lot of people are starting to kind of read their own tea leaves and go in that direction. Want to thank the folks who chimed in and joined the conversation. A thank you to Joe Smeltzer as well. A good chat about Penn State football that you can go back and listen to. A thank you to Joel Nelson for his fine work behind the glass. Follow us on Twitter. That is brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Dan Zangrilli has the North Shore Tavern leadoff show next here on 93.7 The Fan. Donnie Chedrick signing off.